Okay, so starting part two of our workshop today. So hopefully you've had a coffee break and kind of refreshed yourselves. The video we showed, right, so I'm going to go back to the video we showed right at the start with Dawn. Has anyone got any thoughts, like just any initial thoughts of the fact that Dawn waited, I think it was 10 years, she had chronic back pain for 12 years until she got occupational therapy. Did that shock anyone? Anyone get any opinions?
It was shocking that, like, there wasn't anybody at any earlier stage that went, oh, that might be helpful.
Yeah.
I feel like it happens more than, like more than the hour is not as well known as what it should be. Mm-hmm. I think we
have to explain it a bit more. Does that resonate with you? Which is... it's not a nice thing as well, you know, to have that feeling. And that's why, you know, it's so good that yous are 4th years. Me and Kerry were excited about the fact that yous are 4th years because yous are going to be doing this. And hopefully, you know, seeing things like that does change your way of thinking and tries, like, makes you have those conversations and things. Does anyone else think, you know, what they would have done differently? Like, you know, is it the conversations? What do you think's missing? What do you think was missing out of that? Was it conversation? Was it the fix-it model and it didn't fix it, so we'll just give up? Like...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about self-management in this R programme, and it, you know, that communication is a key. And as well, it's important to remember that I'm not standing here preaching, being like, it's all on you to have that conversation. It's not at all. But it sometimes is a wee bit of your responsibility to kind of push that. But yeah, it does work both ways, because at the end of the day, it's that person, it's their health. But sometimes that encouragement goes a long way. So self-management, has, out of interest, anyone heard of the term? That's really good. I'm really happy about that. So, in 2008, the Alliance, along with Individuals with Long-Term Conditions, wrote the first strategy for self-management in Scotland. And what's so good at the time is the fact that it wasn't by policymakers in the Scottish Government. It was written by real people. And it's actually, when you read it, it's, for all it's nearly 10 years old, it's still relevant. It's everyday language. It's not screeds and screeds of such high level stuff. It's just putting it into context. And 5 principles were developed out of this. So, be accountable to me and value my experience. You know, and actually sometimes we need to rethink that and be like, actually, yeah, value their experience and don't just dismiss it all the time. I'm a whole person. This is for my whole life. Again, self-management is about living well with the condition. You know, the condition shouldn't manage the person. I'm a leading partner in the health, in the management of my health. It's obviously about giving them the time. They're involved in their own care. Clear information that helps me make decisions that are right for me. What's coming out more and more in the past month, even with me on my radar, is that we need to be ensure who we're talking about, who we're talking to actually understands what we're saying. It's all well and good being like, here's your prescription, you've got to take 4 times X, 5 times a day after a meal, and they walk out. You know, statistics show that you only remember something like 40% of what's said with a health professional. So what's happening with the other 60? I went to a health literacy event by NHS Education for Scotland last week. The national reading age for people in Scotland is 11, which is just incredible. And, you know, we're all kind of, we've all been at university and things like that. Our reading age isn't that, but you've got to think that's the national average. And there's actually, they've done studies on leaflets. Just information leaflets that you'll find in your doctors, and the reading age for them was 16 to 19. And it's like, why are you producing stuff for 16 to 19 when you know the reading age is 11? And that might seem really simplistic to us, but it's, you know, it's, if everyone can get that message, why are we not doing it that way? Because I know, see, if it's just given to me layman's terms, I'll understand it much more. Or, you know, if you hear a story, I understand that rather than reading loads and loads of policy documents. And what is really important to remember is self-management's not a replacement for services. Self-management is putting the individual living with a long-term condition in the driving seat. It's about their life, what matters to them, and really encouraging them to to support their self-management, support what matters to them, if it is, you know, the walking groups, or it's the fact that they want to be with their family. It's just encouraging them to take ownership, feel in control. It's an approach. It's not something that is a one-stop shop. I can't make somebody self-manage, and what someone else will self-manage is a different journey for someone else. It's, you know, it's just about opening up the conversations with people. And I kind of have all these economic costs and stuff, but I'm not going to touch on it. So we've got a campaign within the self-management team, My Conditions, My Terms, My Life. And it's just real people telling their story, what self-management means to them. And that's a couple of quotes that people have said to us. Self-management gives me a structure to my day and my life, so it helps me and really gives me a focus. It's about feeling better in yourself, not necessarily with the conditions, because they are what they are, but just feeling better in yourself, and it leads to more confidence and things. But what your role going forward in that is to have the conversations around the term. Don't be scared of the term self-management. You know, people would like, what's that? But when you actually break it down, this is for them. This is to help them live well. And what really surprised me, I just got data from Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland. And a couple of years ago, they done a survey with 225 health professionals, predominantly were hospital setting. And they talked about what is the biggest benefit of self-management. And out of the survey, it's time efficient, it actually saves time. Because people are confident in themselves, they're not making an appointment every single time they feel something's wrong. They're realising what's wrong with them, they're saying, I think I should need to lower my medication. And the biggest benefit was time efficiency. The biggest challenge was the time spent to have the conversation. So it was a benefit and a challenge, and that was coming from staff. So I kind of want to shake you all, like shake people and be like, you know, that time spent for 5 minutes to have a real conversation with somebody will save you time in the long run. But you also can't be scared of having the conversation. You know, some of us will sit and be like, oh, don't really want to ask them because, well, if it's something I can't answer. We don't have all the answers. Nobody is going to have all the answers, but we should know where we're going for the answers. We should be able to be honest and hold your hands up. Listen, I don't really know what to do about this at the moment, but I'm going to come back and find out. Because I do it. I don't know all the answers in my job at all. I have to ask any other thing. Have you heard about the campaign What Matters to Me? Or What Matters to You? Yeah. So, like, a personal story is, there's, you know, Tommy that I was saying working dementia, he kind of really pushes this campaign. And it is about having those good conversations with people. What matters to you makes a huge difference. And I went into the hospital a couple of weeks ago to visit my uncle, and on his board behind him was, you know, name, what he takes, blah blah blah, and the question, what matters to me, with four boxes around it. And I was like, yes, great, I totally know about that, I just came from a human rights festival. But it was blank. And you're like, great incentive if it doesn't actually get asked. And obviously I get my high horse, but I want you to get on your high horse. You know, we have this knowledge, we should be pushing for these things. It took 5 days before somebody asked him to fill it in, and what did get filled in was he can't swallow. That's not what it's about. It's about the fact that he loves his wife coming in, that he really likes Lucozade. You know, that's what matters. That's what makes his day a wee bit better, not the fact that he needs to get plasma and drips and things like that. That's just part of the parcel. That will happen regardless. But just like asking his name, what does it mean to you? He relaxes, and then the nurse gets that wee bit insight of who he actually is as a person. So, you know, don't be afraid of having these conversations. Don't know what my next slide is. Self-management at the end, you know, I'm not saying, and I hope that that's clear, that this isn't about yous taking ownership of self-management. It's about encouragement. It's that partnership with people. Self-management at the end of the day lies with the person living with a long-term condition. But just teasing that out goes a long way. Another wee video. Another wee video, and then we're going to kind of go and do a wee exercise as well, guys. So this, I'm going to show this video about Angela. Both of the people that we've shown, Angela, we do self-management awards every year in October, and one of them is the individual transformational story. So Dawn, who we've seen earlier, was a finalist, and Angela is the winner from last year. So like, they're real people, and I think it really puts it into context for me when you hear real stories. That's what makes a difference for me. So Angela's 39. I'm going to show you the video and then tell you a bit more about it, and it'll make sense. So this video was only made, about a month ago. Right, I bet you I might not be able to get this big enough.
Something happens every day towards recovery and helping other people and helping myself. So it's like I wake up in the morning and I'm literally like, what else can happen today? When I was 19, I got diagnosed. So 20 years ago, I got diagnosed. It's just been a bumpy ride. Biggest help for me is that I feel like what I've got to say doesn't matter. And all of this is about how you say it. You know, put it over appropriately. Don't scream at people. Writing is a huge thing. I feel like anything quite intensely, whether that be happy or sad, I write about it. Well, I made a promise to myself when I was in hospital on the last admission that I was going to take every thought and every feeling I've had and offer it to people. You know, really just understand it more than anybody, which is also the health professionals and most of all myself. I think now my experience is going to be used. I think that I can hope to help other people speak up and find their voice. So I'm in control of it now because my medication has changed. Give me the ground level to then go on and do things to self-manage for the people I never had that stability. I know now it's okay to ask for help, and I know now as well that I have a responsibility to help me, whereas before I would just think, oh no, I don't want to cause a fuss, but I see them regularly, and I see the same ones regularly. I'm excited to be part of life really, because I spent even seven years of my life I spent, I wouldn't come out of the house because my anxiety was so high. I missed all the important things in life, like all my friends, weddings and christenings, and I can be part of that now, and that's
Angela. Angela was the winner of our Transformational Award, and she's now a massive advocate for self-management and what that means, and she can see it, what it meant in her life, and how she can share that message and how it can help her peers and things. But it took one conversation for one health professional to actually start what self-management, like, you know, we need to really move away from this paternalistic doctor knows best and work together. So Angela's 39, she was diagnosed, she's been living with bipolar disorder for about 20 years, and during periods of depression, Angela practiced self-harm, has made a few attempts at suicide. You know, she actually said to her health professional only a couple of years ago, please help me, I'm terrified of myself. So, you know, these conversations, yeah, they're so scary to have. Do you want to open that can of worms and hear that? But would you not rather hear it then and try and help that person than in 10 years' time when they might not be here or the next day? You know, don't be afraid of these. Since then, since that actual conversation of I'm terrified of myself and a health professional being like, okay, let's work this out. And everything's not going to get solved in a day. Of course, with all pressure, it's time and time. But, you know, finding out a wee bit more about that person, and then maybe the next time you see them, you remember something, or you say, have you went and seen your daughter? Because I know that you're really looking forward to it. You know, about having these conversations. And to me, Angela in that video looks so happy, and she's so excited now that she's won the self-management award in October, and I send her opportunities, you know, like the video, and she's so keen to get involved. And the NHS governance event that I mentioned earlier about, we invited some of our members to talk about their experiences. I emailed her and was like, I think you'd be a great advocate to speak about your experience because she's confident, she wants to change the systems to a better way. And she emailed me back, and I noticed that she emailed me back at 4 in the morning, and she was in hospital because she'd had a relapse. You know, so it's not like she's on a journey. Self-management is a journey constantly, you know. And she was so disappointed because she wanted to be sitting in the room saying, this is my experience, help me make changes, because listen to the people in the room. And she still said, you know, can you just sign me up anyway and I'll let you know if I can't make it. She was in hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning emailing me wanting to get her voice heard. But I'll advocate for her now. You know, that's my job, is to advocate for these type of people. And she is a real inspiration, but it just takes one conversation. And also, we need to realise that self-management as well, you might get somebody that sounds amazing and is speaking really well and things, but we can't take that for granted, because seeing a week later, we need to ask them again how they're doing, what's, you know, it's not just, oh, I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, he's totally fine, next appointment, oh, he'll be fine, you know, it's just not being afraid to say, are you okay, what matters to you today, what have you been doing, is anyone willing to admit that sometimes that's a scary thought? Is it a scary thought to some people to have conversations like that? Or, yeah, you know, and it's a scary thought, because people come up to me and we don't deliver services, but people will come up and tell me their story because I work in a self-management team, but I don't know what to do sometimes. But you know, I can go on Alice and I'll find resources and I'll find something, because I'm passionate about it and I believe in self-management, because I believe if somebody's really supported to self-management, it will reduce their time in hospital. We only get, on average, I think it's about, you know, this is on average, 5 hours a year with a health professional. So it's something like 8,700, and please don't do the sums to work that out, but it's something like 8,700 and something, we're on our own. So we need to know what matters to me. I need to self-manage. Like, I can't practice what I preach. If I don't self-manage, that's, you know, self-management's for those with a long-term condition, but if I'm having a really shit day, like, I'll go home and just take a couple hours out and just recharge my batteries and come back. We all need to look after ourselves in order to do the jobs that we do. So I'll stop talking, kind of. This would make... Okay, so what does it mean to you? So we've put flip charts, post-its, like a pen, on all of the tables, and we just want you to think about everything that we spoke about today. And I know it's a lot of information just kind of fired out at you, but if you were taking a self-management approach, so what are the barriers and challenges you'll face? So if you think about what are you scared of, what are the barriers that will stop you embedding this approach, how would you overcome these? And do you see self-management as an extra? So I'll write them up in that thing, but if you just think of those three questions, then we'll feedback and we'll kind of put it into more of a conversation. So what's the barriers? How do you overcome them? Do you see it as an extra? Okay, we're just going to be like 5 minutes to quickly talk on your tables. Okay, I've put them on this slide as well.
Thank you. I'm like almost time for myself. Thank you. hands here throughout June.
Guys, not that like I want to stifle any conversation, it's actually so good to hear that you are talking about it and you want to talk about it, and I will, like, if he's, well, you're kind of doing the next kind of 20 minutes, if you think of things, write it down, because I want to read it, and, you know, this is how I learn about things, and share the fact that some of these things I know you are going to say are going to be commonalities with the other people that I talk about. Does anyone want any feedback, like, kind of what some of your key things, barriers were that you think you'd be coming up against?
You said motivation would be a big one. Like
from yourself?
Client motivation.
Yep.
I think for our client advocacy.
Yeah.
Motivation.
But I think it is still quite noticeable that, like Kenny was saying, that particularly the older generation, it's still, they think that we should be fixing them kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think maybe public opinion or knowledge is a wee bit behind the kind of professional agenda when it comes to self-management.
Yep.
Which is something we've got a challenge.
Will you write these down?
No.
Damn.
I will do.
And also just kind of cross over into like talk about the beginning age and stuff like that. Like I was saying that my grandma didn't learn how to read until she was like 40. Like literally, and she was like a qualified nurse, and she didn't learn how to read until she was 40. So like you've got that barrier there of like, then if you're trying to overcome this barrier by bringing in education and stuff like that, and then if it's an old generation, they've got some kind of long-term condition that maybe affects them cognitively, and you're trying to write them things down so they remember it, but then they've got this like education lacking from their younger ages. So
yeah.
It's a big holistic view of a person kind of overcoming those barriers in that sense.
Yeah, totally. That's really interesting, actually, because I don't think I've heard that one.
It's
much come before, come out before. Does anyone else have any things that's new to that to add? Any barriers? It's not that easy.
That can be an interesting point about just the existing culture in healthcare and the previous culture of, you know, I don't know, 50 years of common vaccinated sort of idea.
Yeah.
To overcome that.
Totally. Totally.
To have the confidence to do for themselves sometimes.
Yeah, and that's what all these policies go like stand towards, about moving away from that. But how do you change culture like that? You know, and that's the thing about our jobs. We just need to keep going in a way sometimes, like just keep pushing it and pushing it, because you can't change a culture overnight. But that's just it. If we don't do it now, will we ever do it? You know, people have to be out there advocating. Any other barriers? What about, like what I talked about, what about time?
Yeah.
We're under so much pressure, we have X amount of, like, X time with individuals that we work with and things. What you're saying kind of comes back to communication. You know, are they actually understanding what I'm saying as well? And I've kind of wrote down what I think as well, like, and it's the same in engaging with the unengaged. Like, people sometimes just don't want it, and that's okay. You know, we don't need to force this down people's throats, but at least that, I'd say, we're having the conversations about it. Some people will be happy, they go to their appointment, they get their blood pressure checked, they go home, and that's all they want. But you know, asking just a wee bit how are you could make a difference. And as well, I think like now that you're about to go out and actually have these conversations with people, what I kind of bear in mind and what I said about my uncles having the what matters to me is, think about the people that you see as if it was your loved one. What would you want for them? You know, because I think that sometimes changes my thinking. If it's somebody that, if it was my dad sitting in a setting, like, I want the nurse or the OT or someone to be asking this and that, you know, and it's just about sharing that knowledge, because I'll speak to my uncle and be like, why is that not filled in? You should be asked, like, not that he should be asking to get it filled in, but that's a different story. But, you know, go and get this, and it's just encouraging and talking to people about it. Do you have anything to add?
I was just going to ask, what other things did you pick up as you were having your conversations around the table? Mm-hmm.
Just thought now the family can be equally a barrier as well.
Yeah.
Has anyone encountered that in a placement anywhere where maybe a family, or well, usually a family, wants the person to be done to, and the person doesn't? Yeah. Yeah, some nods around the room.
The family want to de-skill them, you know, but people going to find the carers to do for them when they're looking at themselves. That's a big one.
Because they want to keep them safe?
Yeah. But just the fact they think they're getting older, they want people to make their meals when they do it themselves.
Seems like good reasons,
I saw that. I was at my, of course it was Mother's Day on Sunday, and I was at my mother-in-law's, and my husband's got like a million brothers, so they were all there gathered around this woman whose mobility is really pretty shocking, but anyway, but she can still do it for herself, and of course she gets out the chair like this, and they're all like running at her, and I'm going, sit down, let her do it herself. And it's like, it's exactly that, it's like, see, if you keep doing things for her, she won't be able to do them soon. And they've taken her car keys away from her, and I think this is just... So I think that is a massive barrier, and it's one you really need to give a lot of thought to in terms of, how do you manage that? Don't know if you guys could see what she was doing there, but it was illegal. It involved firearms.
What do you think then about, we've kind of talked about, do you have any thoughts about how you'd try to overcome these at the moment? Obviously things you'll learn more, but anything just now that jumps out of how you would overcome them?
I think it's a big thing about education, and I think as OTs, like, it has been drilled into us since day one that we are advocates for this profession, and we are more in this kind of area, definitely one of the more educated professions, and you see it, like, I don't doubt that I was the only one who saw it in placement, and the only one who had to stand up to medics who have 20 years experience on me and be like, hold on a second, like, when you're sitting there at 21 years old, like, and we've been told that all along, and I think it is a big thing about education, about our role and about self-management and that kind of evidence base that's behind it as well, like standing up for it, not being like, oh yeah, we're not basket weavers and making cups of tea, like, we have an evidence base that we work from, and you having that conversation with somebody about what matters to them and self-management is going to save us time in the long term, and there's evidence to show that. So if you're talking about the strain on the resources of the NHS, then you're going to counteract that by having this conversation. Kind of just makes sense, doesn't it?
It's just trying to make people see that that is, like, that's huge. If you just, you know, it's free to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And things, and signpost to other resources, and that's where the third sector come in as well, you know, signposting to other charities that can help that individual, that they're not always having to chap your door. Anything else about kind of how to overcome? Obviously it's quite a tricky question to answer.
I suppose social media now have the most accessible resource, but for everybody have a mobile phone. And
do you mean to signpost people?
Yeah. So that's the, I think, how you reach the most majority of people. You have, like, people from any sort of social background holding their mobile phones, being on social media in some way or another. So, like, even through that, you probably reach them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think. You know
why? Like, they don't know how to actually achieve them. You know, delivering the message there, because...
Yeah.
As a challenge in itself, but I suppose that's the medium.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts?
I think technology in general, in terms of access to the internet, does give people that opportunity for education as well. I'm kind of reluctant to say that as well. Sometimes I think there can be a reliance on it as well. It's okay, don't go see a health professional, just log on to the internet and that'll sort of...
Google doctor.
Yeah, but at times it can just be a matter of someone sometimes checking up on a symptom or something they can do for themselves.
Yeah, totally. And, like, one of the things that I'm working on just now is for a toolkit, and, you know, loads of exist, but a toolkit for frontline health professionals to support self-management. And in order to do that, I've got two focus groups I'm hosting this afternoon and this evening with individuals with long-term conditions or unpaid carers. And the questions that I'm asking today is, what do you want your health professional to ask? You know, what's the conversation that made a difference to you? You know, and that's how I spread the self-management, because I'll feed in this information and feed it out again. You know, so it's just constantly raising awareness and having advocates for it.
it does just feel like sometimes, like, as BHPs and in that kind of role where you're saying to somebody, what are your goals? What are you wanting to get out of this? What are your long-term objectives? And it's something that's maybe lacking from the medical model, which I think needs to start being incorporated. Mm-hmm. And it is about what's important to you and how can you achieve it.
Yeah, and it's exactly like Dawn wants to swim the channel.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they're not going to get there, but let's think, you know, is it just being able to go down to the local swimming pool then to get your bit of strength back or something, as opposed to writing them off completely? And what you're saying about really resonated with me. I was saying, like, I'm 21 years old going into a thing. I sometimes get really scared when I've sat around steering groups with, you know, professionals that have been working for about... They probably shouldn't be in the profession anymore, they look that old. But, you know, and I sometimes
stop
think...
about me, can't.
Sometimes I think, oh God, I just look like a little girl. Like, will anyone take me seriously? But then, so it's kind of like my message to you is, you know this stuff, you are going to know it better right now because you have just done it all. Like, so I'm having to learn not to be afraid to get up and speak because I know exactly what I'm speaking about. It might not always come out my mouth that way. But I know what I'm talking about and I believe in it. So I'm valued around that table, but it's just, you know, having that strength to sometimes be like, no, sorry, I'll stop you there. You know, I've got something to say, or I don't quite agree with it. And you're not always going to agree, but and you might not always get your way, but at least if we're having conversations to challenge that thinking sometimes makes a difference. If you don't understand it, you know, question that understanding. Like, you made that decision, but I don't quite get it. Why not? You know, and that's how you start to break down these barriers, is not being afraid to have the conversations with our patients, with our staff, with our colleagues, you know, and it's really important to remember that, because I used to be blonde as well, so I used to think I was the young blonde one, and I'd get the connotations that come along with it, but yeah, so I'm still fighting that fight. Anything else to add?
I'm just wondering if anyone's got any other stories about how they've managed to kind of overcome perhaps some of the entrenched cultures where asking somebody what matters to them isn't always the norm. Yeah?
Definitely. I had a patient working in pediatrics and had an initial assessment and someone was telling me that she was concerned about her daughter's eating and she wanted to work on that. During the course of the conversation, it came out that mum was also dressing her daughter. She was 3-4 years old, so probably should be doing it herself by now. And the OT put down the goal of being able to dress independently, but mum had said that she wasn't really concerned by that, and the argument was essentially, well, if we don't do it now, she's going to come back to the service in a year's time, so let's prevent another referral back to the service. So it was completely a service-led decision. I just kind of made the argument. It turned out we went and worked on that goal anyway without properly collaborating it. And then we went out and saw the little girl and she dressed first time independently. And I kind of made the point to the OT, maybe if we collaborated a bit more, we would have found out that the reason mum wasn't so concerned by it, she probably knew she could do it for herself anyway. So, yeah, had that kind of thing.
And what was the OT's response to that?
They basically accepted it.
Did they?
Yeah,
that's good.
It's kind of made their appeal to person sensitiveness. And I don't think there really is an argument you can have against that, because it's not a collaborative role. And
yeah.
As far as our code of ethics is even concerned, we really should have been doing that.
Absolutely. But I'm sure some people have different experiences of that. Do they? No? Anyone else?
The problem I have had with that most is, I hesitate to say it, the West of Scotland male attitude of what's important to you, not him, not a thing, just get up in the morning, just whatever, why, it's fine, just that conversation like, alright, so goals, what are we thinking? but like, it's just kind of stripping that back to like, it might be something as basic as like, I like going to the shop to get the paper and the rolls in the morning, and like, it's what's important to that person, but it is that like, total attitude of, they've probably never had somebody ask them, and they were never raised in a like culture where it was an acceptable thing to talk about your feelings and talk about where you came from. And it is thinking about that kind of culture and that kind of belief and that kind of pride thing, that real like sense of like everything's fine, and kind of breaking that down a bit without taking that pride away from them, because that's important to them as well.
Yeah.
And that's when your motivation comes into play as well then. Yeah. You know, you could go and see 5 different people in a day that's all like that. Yeah. And that's quite draining, I can imagine. But, like, you know, next day you need to try again. You know, and it's hard, I can imagine. Because my uncle is doing that right now. And you're like, oh my God. But I'm fine. It's totally fine.
Poor OT that's working with him.
I know, God.
We've got one more thing that we'd like you to do before we finish today. And that's, remember when we were talking, about policy, and we were saying that there's no point in policy if it sits on a shelf and no one does anything with it. So we don't want this just to be another workshop or lecture. We want you to have a real think about what you're taking away from today. So I'd like to invite you to each take a post-it note, and if you need some more, we've got them. And on the post-it note, I'd like you to write down for yourself, not to share with anyone else unless you particularly want to. I want you to take this away and into your new world. What are you going to do differently from today around 2 things? Promoting self-management in your role as an OT and challenging the medical model. So what are you going to do differently from today around promoting self-management in your role as an OT and challenging the medical model? They're only for you, but keep them somewhere so that maybe in 6 months' time, maybe those of you that are starting work quite early, by year's time, you can look back and think, did I manage to do that? And as part of your CPD, it also helps in terms of thinking about maybe those are the themes that you keep working on through your career, because my bet is even through your careers, the medical model will never disappear. It's going to be there for quite a wee while, but it's going to take people like you to help the doctor to see that actually other people can do it too. So have a wee think about that and just take some time to write that down.